Okay, that Lawrence O'Donnell thing. I know it's only been a day, but it's not getting old.
It's so good.
Okay. There's insanity in the control room tonight.
You guys, that's just begging for, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but like a mashup of that and then our control room.
Oh, I did not think about that. Uh-oh. Ja'Cory and Arthur, power up.
Which one of you guys can juggle?
Because I thought you were going to say a mashup of that and the Bill O'Reilly thing, but that's already happened.
Right, yeah. I saw that.
Happened,
I saw
like,
with MC Hammer music.
Yeah, there's like within 35 seconds of that tape hitting the internet, there was like a mashup of that and O'Reilly.
It just keeps giving.
Yeah. Okay, all right, so I promised you guys a million pieces, so let me get to it. All right, so I'm gonna power through the old stuff, because some of you might have heard some of these stories, and then I'll get to the new Uber stuff. Okay, so the false arrest of mine, I was in Hoboken, I was in law school, so I don't even wanna tell you how long ago that was. And okay, fine, a quarter of a fucking century, I'm now going to go and die.
No.
And isn't that unfucking believable?
It
was 25 years ago.
Wow.
And you know, it takes two to make a thing go right, was released 29 years ago. That's like Bing Crosby for people who are teenagers today.
Yeah.
As Bing Crosby was to us. Anyway.
What is that? Is that a song?
Yes.
It takes two to make a thing.
I know.
Okay, don't rub it in. Anyways, all right. So we got drunk in Hoboken. It's true, we were intoxicated. And it was a mixed racial group, because that's all I've ever known. And I was being loud and obnoxious, and I was banging on a garbage can and singing or something, right? Mm-hmm. Because we were having fun. It was a great, great night. We had gotten and eaten cheap steaks and drank a lot of beer. Uh-huh. And then a couple of cops come out of the bushes like they're Sean Spicer. But they don't, just like in the story today, and that's why I brought it up, they're in plain clothes. They don't have any identification. And so we yell at each other back and forth, because we're like, we don't even know you're cops, dude. I don't know, so you just like came out of the bushes and started yelling at us, right? So we're about to go, and then one of my friends who's Chinese said, you're just picking on us because we're Asian, right? Now, I don't know if that was a wise thing to say, because actually I didn't really get that sense. But you know, the cops in Hoboken back then had a reputation for being dicks, which is what they proved a second after he said that. So it doesn't matter. He has every right to say it. Of course, he shouldn't be arrested for that. So as soon as he said that, boom, they throw him against the wall. They handcuff him, and one of his hands is like twisted, like they handcuffed him wrong. And he's like, Jesus. And like, that's an obvious false arrest. He didn't do anything. And I was really curious to see what they were going to write that he did do.
Right.
So, but they still have not identified themselves. And I'm at that point, I'm actually working interning in a prosecutor's office, right? So they open up this door, they like throw him in, like next to this brick building that we're in. And so I step into the door and I go,
do you know who I am?
No, I'm
an intern at a law office. Stop in the name of that.
Right. To be fair, a prosecutor's office.
Sorry, a prosecutor. Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, I didn't say any of that. All I said was, guys, you didn't show us any ID. We don't know who you are. You've got to show ID. I might be wrong. I might have said that I was a lawyer. Not I might have. I definitely said I was a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer.
Okay. Right. Oh, that was a bad idea. Anyway.
It's literally illegal.
But yeah, I know. But they arrested me for saying I was a lawyer. And they said, that's it. You're under arrest. They took me in. Okay. And so I'm like, what are they going to write? So for me, impeding a police investigation, because I asked them for identification. And then for Paul, which I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, you don't know who Paul is. Anyway, they said for assaulting a police officer. They just made it up. And back then, remember, I'm a Republican, and I'm working at a prosecutor's office. It's my first introduction to cops blatantly lying about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm a naive little conservative, not conservative, I'm a liberal Republican, but still. Mm-hmm. I'm a naive little Republican there, and I'm like, what? They just lied. That's not true, right? Uh-huh. And I'm sure like African Americans are like, no, really? Okay, wow. So we went to court later. the whole story is fun and really, really long, but to make a long story just slightly shorter, our lawyer didn't show up. I'm like, oh, we're totally screwed. And then the prosecutor comes up to me, the guy for that case, and he's like, look, man, I know you didn't do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And because he had already talked to the prosecutor's office that I was working at. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. And I remember that I said I was a lawyer because they kept calling me Mr. Lawyer when we were in the precinct.
Right. Mr. Lawyer over here.
Yeah. And it turns out the building we were behind was police headquarters. That's why they opened the door and put us in.
Oh, wow.
We didn't realize it. It was like the brick wall of police headquarters. If you walked around, you would see police headquarters.
You've told this story before, and I remember this story, but I don't remember that fact.
Yeah.
So that's, wow. Okay.
That was unfortunate. Anyway, so, but they're like, they're not going to let Paul off. I'm like, but you know he didn't do that either. And he's like, I work with these guys every day. Okay. And so he's like, here's the plea, yada, yada. That we'll let you take. And as I'm considering whether Paul should plead guilty to a non-criminal offense, so it's like a civil, it's like a traffic ticket, but he's gonna have to pay $500. And we don't have a, and he's like, look, man, this judge, he's not playing around. Oh, the one thing our lawyer told us before he bailed was whatever you do, you gotta win at trial because the appeal judge is a total dick and you'll never win on appeal. Mm-hmm. So that's sitting in the back of my head. And then the judge, right before the case, goes, hey, Vinny, Joey, to the cops, come up here and tell me what happened. I'm like, oh my God, this is unfucking believable. So I did one last thing and I got, the original plea deal was for him to plead to a misdemeanor. And I said, no, we'll pay more, but make it a traffic ticket, basically, mm-hmm. and then and expunge my case. And the prosecutor's like, yeah. And so they expunged my record. I'm telling you about it. But it doesn't really matter, it's bullshit. Expunging your record means it's a false arrest. It should have never happened in the first place. We'll just get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Next time I was pulled over by a cop, they're like, oh, so you like to impede investigations. So I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm not
me?
Kidding at all. Okay.
Fucked up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
That. I just realized, though, that was like your loss of innocence. You
a
know what
bit.
I mean?
Yeah.
Because like, I consider like that naive, youthful time in your life, your innocent time, where you like see the world through rose-colored glasses, and then you see what humans are really like, and then you're like, oh, okay, so I hate everyone. By the way,
tell us about your point of view.
I don't hate everyone, right? But it's like, I recently got interviewed by someone, I tweeted that interview, you guys should check it out. And she asked me, you know, what's changed through like the work that I've done, like as a person, how have I changed? And I've mentioned like that loss of like being naive, and I miss it. Like I fucking miss it so much.
Yeah, everyone does.
Yeah.
Most of art is about that.
Yeah.
Who was the interview with? Oh, never mind. Okay, we
I just forgot the
same,
name.
It was the same judge. That's what it was. It was the same judge as his case.
No, it's a magazine. I'm going to look it up right now because I feel terrible that I forgot the name.
All right,
of the
that's
magazine.
Okay. We'll come back. All right, so second story is about the ear pierce at MSNBC. So Obama gives a speech about Egyptian revolution, and I've got a bunch of generals sitting around me because it's MSNBC. I happen to be live on the air as he was doing it, so they're coming back to me. I go, look, I'm gonna go to General XYZ, I don't remember who it was, in a second, but after that, I'm gonna keep it real with you on what Obama said. And I've told the story before, I don't remember if it was immediate, 10 seconds later, 30 seconds later, whatever it was, my producer was in my ear saying, don't keep it real. Okay, so, and then I had long conversations with people who I've never revealed their names, hosts and producers at not hosts, hosts and executives at MSNBC, who told me that it's not right to criticize the president right after a speech. Then we had to have a hilarious conversation about what amount of time do I need before I can criticize the president.
So what's the reason for the wait that they gave you?
That it's unbecoming. Right. You have to give the president some degree of deference and respect. I'm like, well, I don't remember us doing that to Bush. But maybe MSNBC did, to be fair to them, right? But it makes no sense once you break it down. So I said, okay, should I wait an hour? Well, I'll be off the air. should I wait a day? Should I wait a week until no one's talking about it anymore?
Yeah.
And no one had an answer to that question because it shows you how fucking preposterous that is.
Right.
Like, when else would you make a comment about his speech other than right after the speech?
Right.
And we all made a lot of comments about it on the panel, but apparently only positive ones were allowed.
That's so crazy.
And that gives you a sense of what was happening at MSNBC.
The only earnest thing would be to say, like, they'd have to prove that there were times when people had a knee-jerk reaction so often that was wrong or ill-informed or that they had to change later in order for them to justify, like, well, just in our experience, your first reaction right after is wrong. But that's bullshit.
Like, no, they never even made that excuse.
In that case, you'd write down, like, what your reaction probably is going, you know, is, and then hold it up to them, like, I wrote this right after, and it's 2 days later, I feel the same fucking way.
Yeah.
You know, but it's disingenuous.
And at that point, I guarantee you, if you went to your executive producer and said, okay, let's do that story about how Obama was full of crap on that Egyptian speech, they'd be like, why are we bringing that back 2 days later? That's not in the news anymore.
Right, yeah.
Guaranteed.
Mm, that's sad. Anyway, that makes me sad.
And you know, of course, what I did. I ignored it, and I told him what Obama said. And I said on air, he just told you whatever you wanted to hear. He told you that Mubarak's a great ally of ours, and that he supports the protesters. That's classic Obama in a very eloquent way, because he's such a great politician, saying he's on both sides. And if you wanted to hear that, hey, the protesters are fighting for democracy, that's exactly what you heard. If you wanted to hear Mubarak's a great ally of ours and should be supported, that's exactly what you heard. Mm-hmm. And he did it so smoothly that you almost couldn't tell, but I could. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did. You can go back and watch that speech. There's no question I was right about that. In fact, I think they were more upset because I was right.
Yeah. So two things happened on the show today that made me think about a recent lecture that I gave my class. The first thing was, what we talked about in regard to Kilmeade saying you should have these politicians on to talk about their policy instead of just criticizing them, right? And you mentioned correctly that you bring them on and they just spout their talking points and they lie to you and this and that. And so that immediately made me think about, you know, a question one of my students had, and it was about interview style, right? So we went through a class where I'm giving them, you know, tips on interview style, what kind of questions you should ask, how you kind of like, you know, massage your way into asking the tough questions. You don't start from the beginning or else you're not going to get any answers. You got to kind of build a relationship with the person. And one person raised their hand once we started getting to the follow-up questions, the tough questions, blah, blah. She was like, oh, okay, but if you ask these really hard questions and you make this person look bad, they're not going to want to talk to you again. And I was like, that's when you know you're doing your job right. Mm-hmm. And I was like, look, you should always invite that person on the show, right? You should always give them an opportunity to share their perspective. But if they refuse to come on your show because you're not playing softball with them, then fuck them. Like, you can do a great job reporting this story, reporting on this legislation or this policy by doing your own research and uncovering or unraveling the truth, right? That's more valuable than having like a so-called big name or a politician on your show who's just gonna lie to your audience. And I told them, I was like, look, you have to figure out what your objective is. Like, is your objective to be Ryan Seacrest? Because if that's what it is, then you should leave, because that's not news, right?
Right.
If you want to do entertainment, fine, but that's not news. But if you want to do news, if you want to provide a public service, which is what I think journalism is, then it's not about big names and making headlines yourself. It's about telling your audience what's really going on.
Ryan Seacrest is now wondering, how did I wind up on the underside of a bus in this story?
I always think of Ryan Seacrest because in the very first semester that I taught, I always ask my students, like, what are you passionate about? Tell me about yourself. What do you want to do in journalism? And my very first semester, a student said, like, I really look up to Ryan Seacrest. I'm hoping to be the next Ryan Seacrest. And it was so depressing.
I had an interaction with someone I worked with very early on where I was like, what do you want to be, Ryan Seacrest? And he just goes, what's wrong with that? And now I see the virtue. Every time you go through a tough day at work where you really had to like put your nose to the grindstone and keep your priorities where you always said they should be, mm-hmm. against all odds and against the adversity. There is a temptation to just go like, man, I could just like, what if I just ask softball questions to people? What if I'm just the person who folks watch because there's a big name on the interview, and it takes like a few years before they realize that nothing ever comes out of those interviews?
You know? Yeah, dude. And also, here's another thing that's kind of like distressing. So I've gotten into this like weird habit of watching super old debates. Like, I was watching Ross Perot debates, and they're fucking fabulous, right?
Oh my God, what a weird thing to get into. That's such a weird niche slash almost political fetish.
Dude, it's so fascinating. It's so fascinating. Because, like, I'm young, right? So I didn't pay attention. In the early 90s, I didn't watch fucking Ross Perot debates. I was like a child.
Well, you were literally a child.
Yeah.
So you never got to hear about his crazy grandma in the basement?
Dude, but like, okay, so I haven't.
Take a look at this chart.
There was something very endearing about like the way he spoke. Yeah.
No, it's true. Yeah. Like Ross Perot is a complicated character.
Yeah, 100%. Yes. You know, and I love learning about it. So, but here's the thing that I've also learned through watching those old debates. The more things change, the more they stay the same. We've been debating the same shit forever.
I know. But Washington has gotten much more right wing.
Mm-hmm. Like that I agree with.
If you watch the old Reagan versus George H.W. Right. Bush debates in 1980, mm-hmm. you would be shocked at how liberal they are.
Yeah.
Shocked. They're to the left of Obama, and they're trying to out-liberal one another. Mm-hmm. And in today's context, back then they were like, oh, this crazy right wing of Ronald Reagan. But he's like, oh, immigrants, are you kidding me? We should make love to them every day.
Yeah, dude, right? it's crazy. You're
and
right.
By the way, yeah. Reagan did follow through on that, not to making love for it, as far as I know.
That was short.
He's the guy who gave amnesty, literal amnesty, not fake pretend amnesty, literal amnesty to undocumented immigrants in America that the right wing is still angry about. Yeah. That was their beloved Reagan.
Yep.
So it's amazing. Anyway, if you kind of were endearing, you thought Perot was a little endearing, you should go back and watch the legendary debate mm-hmm. of the vice presidential debate in that race.
Okay.
With Admiral Stockdale.
Uh-huh.
That was his running mate. Did you watch this?
I remember the Phil Hartman impression of Admiral Stockdale.
That's it. Okay. So he starts the debate. He's kind of an old fuddy-duddy guy or whatever. And he starts the debate with, who am I? What am I doing here? And we all lost it. Okay, so a friend of mine who's Indian powdered his hair white and like puffed it up like Admiral Stockdale. And I don't know if he did whiteface, I don't remember. And I don't know if that's an unacceptable thing. Anyway, he went around, this was for Halloween obviously. And he went around as Admiral Stockdale, and no matter what anybody said to him, he'd say, who am I? What am I doing here?
The thing about that moment is it got a laugh in the room. Like people got it in the room when it happened.
Yeah, yeah.
It played well during the debate. People were like, I mean, generally in that venue, you hear folks like kind of laugh, and it seemed like it was with him. And it wasn't until after that everybody was like, who am I? What am I doing here? It was the Phil Hartman impression that made it that ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So look, we're not gonna have time for all. I'll save my sister's story for another post game. I promise we'll get to it. And if I don't, just remind me, okay? So why she was so mad at me? That's a really great story. I'm not even sure I've ever told that story. Okay. And by the way, just quick note on Ryan Seacrest. On his upsides, and I've never met him, don't know him at all. So I got no dog in the fight. He works his ass off.
Yes,
he has like 18 different jobs. And I recently found out that he's an investor in a progressive news enterprise. So, God bless Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, every time I feel unmotivated and not driven enough, I think about Ryan Seacrest, as weird as that is. And not because I want to do what he does, but because he does have like 58 jobs.
Well, our discussion was more like, what are we doing with our time on the air?
Right.
And my time on the air, like, I don't like red carpets. I think those are the worst, most soul-crushing moments where you're like, what are you wearing? It's the same thing. And a vapid conversation. My approach is more of the Jim Carrey, where he just kind of goes, you're not here, you don't exist. This is ridiculous. Like he said that recently on a red carpet to someone. He's like, I just don't think you exist. And it was because it's such a weird experience.
Yeah. But so like it's funny how they didn't get what he was saying.
And there's, yes, and but there's also, someone was talking about criticism of Ryan Seacrest on Ryan and Kelly and Ryan in the morning, because while she shares a lot of personal details about herself, and that makes her endearing, especially on the venue of morning television. But that also, that dynamic translates to stuff like what we're literally doing right now, where people are sharing personal stories. Ryan Seacrest doesn't do that.
Yeah, he's pretty private.
And I guess it's whatever, he's just like that guy that interviews people and asks them questions, but the idea that he doesn't share personal experience is another thing that they're trying to get out of him, I think.
He likes to reveal people's personal drama with that Ryan's Roses thing. I hate that.
Yeah, the Ryan Roses back.
But anyway.
Okay, so Uber stories. So there's too many of them because I was in a lot of Ubers over the trip. And there's like so many wonderful ones. One guy's mom is like the Bernie Sanders of Bangladesh.
Love it.
Okay, how is that not awesome? I had another driver from Bangladesh who was... And then I had one that's, but he didn't have any interesting story, so fuck him.
Agreed.
No.
Two stars.
could you imagine I had some stories and if they're boring? Two stars.
Not entertaining.
Yeah. Some guy from Afghanistan was like a big fan of Erdogan. I was just about to talk crap about him. He's like, oh, I love Erdogan. I was like, oh, okay, why? And then he had a really good reason. It's because he's giving money to help the Rohingya Muslims who are being killed in Myanmar. And I was like, oh, well, that is a good thing he's doing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, God bless. Okay. And I almost never talk. I just keep asking them questions because that's the interesting part, right? Mm-hmm. So, all right, which leads us to the three fun ones. So I'm in Miami and it's a normal looking Latino guy. Okay. Anna's already interested.
Yeah. But what do his forearms look like?
Yeah. So I'm telling you this because it's relevant shoulders. Relevant to the story. He's an okay looking guy, and he's not weirdly short. He's just a little short. He's fine. Okay.
Like Brian Kilmeade short?
No. So maybe he was like, I don't know, 5'6", 5'7", whatever. Uh-huh. That's not that short. It's just, I'm just saying he was not an Adonis. Okay. And I said, oh, it's South Beach. So is there like, you got wild and crazy stories? He's like, yeah, I guess so. And he's like, you know, I've had sex with three different women in the Uber. And I was like, wait, no, that's not a little interesting. That's super interesting. What in the world's going on, right? And every single time, and again, it's his version of the story, but I believed him. He was no bullshit guy. He said a bunch of other stuff, right? And he's like, oh, we had these girls in the car and they from out of town and they just wanted to have fun. And one of the girls is like, no, you got to come up to my hotel room and fuck me. You've got to, please, please, please. And he's like, all right.
That's weird. That's one of those rare occasions where the Uber tips the person in the car. Tip.
But just the tip.
Weenus tip.
Give
them the tip.
It's because he's got that Latin flavor.
I don't know. He said there was four girls in the car, but one of them was being a jerk to him, but the other one was like, oh, I'm so sorry about my friend, but come have sex with me.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, that's very nice.
Do you, boo?
Yeah, and then a second story that was incredibly similar to that. Mm-hmm. And then a third story where the girl was really insistent. I think they were from Philly or something.
Uh-huh.
And her friend had been even like worse, and like she had to calm down. And she's like, look, I'll just give you a blowjob. Okay, and he's like, well, that seems fair. Okay, so like crazy shit is happening in Ubers.
Yeah, Christian's never gonna drive an Uber. Like, that's just not gonna happen.
If that guy got laid three times, oh my God. Every night Christian's coming home exhausted.
No. He's not gonna leave the house.
I was in an Uber once and I didn't know what to do because I knew I had to communicate to someone that the smell of this Uber was unacceptable. Uh-huh. Like it was very obviously like the dude had some kind of food in there that he kept burping and it just filled the place. But then you like this is the least terrible thing that is bad about an Uber drive. Like you read the stories about all the terrible, terrible things that befall Uber passengers who don't know they're in for like a terrible experience. But like I gave him like a 4 stars and then like a dude, you gotta not smell like that. You just gotta not smell like that anymore.
Is it, when wow. when you write that? Can you? Does everybody see it or does?
I don't know. That's the thing is I don't know, but it had to be said.
Public.
Like
those reviews aren't. I mean, they're not the
public,
rating
but
is
I don't
public.
Know if it goes to him or the person at Uber.
Because you're actually trying to help a brother out.
But like, I had an Uber where I was pretty sure that this guy was either stoned or drunk.
Oh, I had that too. We literally got out of the car because we were worried about our safety.
Missed like two turns. Like just missed them, just went by them. And he was going slowly and in and out of lanes.
Yeah.
Like that's terrifying.
Yeah. All right, we haven't even gotten to the next one yet. Okay, so for a little intermission with a cute story, the guy dropping me off at the airport this morning was like a grandpa from the middle of Jersey who'd grown up in Jersey and Long Island his whole life. And he was American, okay? I don't know where he's from. He was from America, okay? And he was telling the story of his 8-year-old grandson. And the love for his grandson was oozing out of him, okay? He's been married to the same woman for 49 years. Mm-hmm. And it's obvious he loves her and he loves his kids. And his grandson, he's like, and he somehow was going to throw out the kid was going to throw out the first pitch in a minor league ball game in their town in Jersey, and he said, like, he told his son, you know, make sure you practice with him so he doesn't embarrass himself. It's a big moment for him. And he said he did it perfect, just like a major leaguer, and he got a standing ovation, and they showed his picture on the Jumbotron later. I mean, he just loves his grandson, and it was such a heartwarming ride. And then one other thing, he's like, oh, I once told the kid he was a pain in the ass, and then he went and told his teacher that she was a pain in the ass, and and then maybe it was his daughter, I forget. And my daughter came and talked to me and said he can't. And then I pulled him aside and said, hey, all right, kiddo, can't say that anymore, all right. I was like, I love this guy.
You have good experiences with Uber drivers.
Oh, I do. You just got to open them up. They got great stories. I'm skipping all the other stories, which are pretty good. Mm-hmm. All right, so to get to the last one. It's an African American woman. I don't know that it matters how she looks. Anyway, she's super fun loving. We're having a great conversation. Mm-hmm. She actually, long story as to why I was picking up food, but she was helping me with that. And so I got her cookies. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, thank you. That was so sweet. And we're having a great time. And I'm like, but in exchange, you got to tell me the wildest story you've had in an Uber.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, I got a good one. And so she tells the story about a guy who broke up with his girlfriend, but they had sex one last time, but he still loves her, but he's like almost crying about how he still misses her, and even though he liked the sex, he actually wanted more. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, but this is not that interesting a story. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's like kind of cute, but whatevs. And she's like, well, I didn't tell you what happened at that. And I said, okay, what happened at that? Like, and then he asked me if he could masturbate to me.
Wait.
And I was like, wait, where?
In the car?
He's like, in the car. Okay.
And it was Louis C.K.
So, and I'm like, where was he sitting? He's like, oh, he was in the front seat.
Oh!
Okay.
God.
What the fuck, man?
And I said, so what'd you do? She's like, oh, I let him. He was a sweet kid. I was like, what?
Bless her heart.
Okay. And she's like, and he asked permission. That was nice.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Legal.
And okay, I mean, if she's okay with it, cool. But like, you're gonna let some random dude jizz all over your car?
Bold move.
It was really bold.
Like, I hope she didn't just have like bottles of water. I hope she had plenty of like Kleenex. Yeah.
So I don't know any about. I didn't ask that because I didn't want to get into like where did it go. I didn't, you know.
What's there? Why not just ask all the details?
I know. For whatever insane reason, that's where I drew the line.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And I said, oh my god. So. And he's like, he apologized afterwards. She's like, I didn't mind. And she said, he was actually kind of a good looking kid. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, oh, okay.
But like,
to each his own.
Like, but you're in the car. So what do you do while this is going on? Like, do you watch? Do you look away?
She said that he liked the way that she drank from the straw of her coffee.
Oh, God.
Well, it was apparently very intense. And then I made a whole bunch of coming jokes, and she was laughing so hard. She just did not give a fuck. And then she said, you know what happened at the end? I said, well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, right.
She said, oh, she's like, it turned out great. He gave me a $95 tip.
Wow.
And so she's like, have at it, Hoss, right?
What a gamble. Like, because Uber is a place where you are rating each other. Like, what a bold move it is to say, like, all right, I'm going to now ask her permission to masturbate in her car.
I know, but about like, her. Really, but that's where your mind goes? Your mind goes to, like, she could really leave you a bad rating?
My mind goes to, like... My mind goes to like the moment. I always like the moment someone decides to actually do something. And he had to lead up to that point where he then is like, I'm going to use my mouth and vocal cords to ask this question.
Yeah.
And like where he has to be, where like that's not like I am afraid that I'm going to get a bad review every time I get in an Uber, no matter what. I'm afraid to ask questions, get too
You're
involved.
You're so funny. I've never thought of that. I don't give a shit what my rating is.
Yeah, same.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's not such a bad thing about your personality. You care what others think of you. That's probably a good thing.
I don't know. I don't like when they screw up, so I don't want to screw up. Like, I don't like when they're mean and terrible to me, so I don't want to be mean and terrible
fun.
To them.
Just have fun. Who gives a shit? Of course, don't be mean and terrible. And by the way, also, of course, don't masturbate in their car. Okay. Anyway, and look, it's kind of a funny story because of the way she handled it. It could have been a disastrous story.
Right.
And I told her, like, look, there's a pretty decent chance that he's in jail somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? Because apparently that was his first Uber ride. If he thinks that that's like a standard thing you do in an Uber,
no.
He had a very bad second experience. I could almost guarantee it.
This app is amazing.
Yeah.
Arrive with a smile.
Right. Okay. Fascinating stuff for you guys. I think I delivered on our promise to tell you interesting stories.
Mm-hmm.
Much love. Aggressive Progressive is next, since you guys are members. All right. We'll see you tomorrow.